WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Happy New Year. We're doing our annual 10 Best Show today with our film critic John Powers, who will join us later, and our pop music critic Ken Tucker. Ken has not only brought his list of the best pop, rock, and hip-hop records of 1997, he's brought some of the CDs on the list so he can play them for us. In fact, let's get started with a track from his pick for the best record of the year, Bob Dylan's Time Out of Mind. This is Till I Fell in Love with You.
Well, my nerves are exploding, and my body's tense. I feel like the whole world got me pinned up against the fence. I've been hit too hard, I've seen too much. Nothing can heal me now but your touch. I just don't know what I'm gonna do. I was alright till I fell in love with you.
And Tucker, why is Bob Dylan's record your favorite record of the year?
Well, it's just an amazing piece of music making, I think, produced by Daniel Lanois in this sort of dreamy, beautiful style that really brings out both the cragginess of Dylan's voice and the beauty of his words. You know, it's I'd never heard an album from him that's quite as prickly and generous and funny and so completely free of irony. It really stood out in this year for that reason. I mean, Dylan this year, I mean, it's quite a year. He's, you know, survived heart disease, a meeting with the Pope, and receiving a Kennedy Center honor from Charlton Heston. I think this is the very definition of a survivor. his own son, Jacob Dylan, had a huge pop success with his band The Wallflowers. And yet here's Dylan putting out this record that culminates with this 15-16 minute cut called Highlands, which I think is one of the most extraordinary things he's done. I mean, the whole album is about death, a kind of longing for death, a kind of talking about love as if love is something that he's experienced and may never attain again. I mean, it's a beautifully kind of reverential record about a kind of man's reveries looking back on his past.
What do you think of his voice now, his frayed voice?
I love his voice. I mean, there's a lot of criticism. I mean, he helped produce a Jimmy Rogers tribute album, and people were talking about this squawking croak he had on that. I think his voice is wonderfully expressive on this. It's very, very conversational, very direct.
What are some of the other groups that made or tried to make comebacks in 97?
Well, there are a lot of these old geezers around this year. I mean, the Rolling Stones tried to launch a tour. The tour was successful. Bridges to Babylon, the album, I think, was a pretty mixed success, actually a fairly mediocre release from them. John Fogerty came back with a new album after a decade, Blue Moon Swamp. Fleetwood Mac did a very respectable comeback job putting out this album of greatest hits and a couple of new cuts called The Dance. Paul Simon is in the process of trying to make a comeback with this production of The Cape Man on Broadway that he's written with the poet Derek Walcott. Elton John certainly came to the forefront of people's minds again when he performed Candle in the Wind at Princess Diana's funeral. Elton John gave an interview in Rolling Stone this year with Edmund White that I just admired more than any other rock star interview I'd read in a long time, because he came across as this tough old bird. Like, you know, you don't like me, too bad. It was an address to kind of the younger generation. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep making hits. This is my life, and I really like to do what I do. And I thought it was inspiring in some ways. I thought the best of that kind of older generation of rockers showed that you keep going. It doesn't matter that rock and roll is not a music of youth.
Well, the bands making comebacks aren't necessarily appealing to the young people, but one of the bands on your top 10 list is incredibly young.
Yes.
And quite a success story.
Yes, Hanson, this trio of young fellas from, young fellas, he said, old fogies, these young whippersnappers from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Hanson, these brothers were, 17, 14, and 11. What I really liked about these guys is they have a real appreciation not just for white rock and roll, but old 60s soul music. They're kind of mature beyond their years. They put out an album, their debut, called Middle of Nowhere. It's really good. I think we should play a cut from that.
What do you want to hear?
Sure. It's a song called Where's the Love?
I think a lot of Hanson's listeners are preteens.
Yeah, I think so.
So what do you hear in it, Ken, as an adult?
Oh, well, to me, I mean, there's a whole context in terms of that kind of teeny bopper rock I mean, that sort of genre has tossed up a lot of great hits over the years, everything from, you know, the Archies to the Monkees to there's just a lot of energy in that music. And I think a well-constructed pop single like that has a kind of bursting energy that can get to anyone at any age.
A lot of the really young bands that have come out over the years have had incredible producers behind them, helping to provide the overall vision. Does Hanson have that?
Well, a couple of the cuts on that album were produced by the Dust Brothers, who were kind of a fashionable hip-hop production team. But the rest were done by themselves, and really, of all this kind of teen groups, they are the least controlled by a producer. That would be the opposite of something like the Spice Girls, who also hit big this year. The Spice Girls, you know, I found very charming in the fact that they were completely manufactured and tried to kind of give out with this sort of proto-feminist girl power rants in the midst of their pop singles that they put out, and their biggest hit, Wannabe, I thought was a very catchy song. By the time this year past had ended, they put out their second album called Spice World, which was a complete flop. I mean, they've done the complete cycle in 1 year, from number one to complete bomb. I think the real kind of girl power that the Spice Girls were talking about can be heard in the music of Sleater-Kinney, this female trio from Olympia, Washington, that last year I put their album Call the Doctor on my 10 best list, and this year their album that they released this year called Dig Me Out, I also loved. I mean, Sleater-Kinney kind of continues that punk rock tradition of lots of simple guitars, yelled lyrics. Corinne Tucker's voice, I think, is just an extraordinary instrument. It's like this kind of joyous screech. It's like this voice that's inflamed with the exhilaration that comes from just the sheer pain of love. I mean, there's a lot of sort of agonized love songs on this album, and I'd like to play one of them called Words and Guitar.
That's Sleater-Kinney, one of the records on Ken Tucker's Top 10 of 1997. I think, Ken, this would be a good place to take a short break, and we'll talk some more and listen to more music from your Top 10.
Sounds good.
This is Fresh Air. My guest is Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker, and he's playing for some of the records on his top 10 list of 1997. What happened in rap and hip-hop in 97?
Well, I would say that the defining event in hip-hop this year was the death of Biggie Smalls, or to use his real name, Christopher Wallace. Was 24 years old, murdered in a drive-by shooting in L.A. that still hasn't been solved. As the notorious Big, he had put out an album called, presciently enough, Life After Death, which also used as a collaborator producer Sean Puffy Combs. These two really defined that kind of last gasp of gangster rap, that kind of hardcore hip hop. Over the course of the year, Puffy Combs, who had a tremendous success with his song "I'll Be Missing You," which was a kind of salute, goodbye, farewell to Notorious Big. That was a huge hit. To me, a lot of that music has exhausted whatever creativity it had within it. And so I was cheered by the emergence of a woman like Missy Elliott, who's only 25 years old. She's a songwriter and producer as well as a performer. She put out her debut album called Supa Dupa Fly, which had a wonderful cover of the old 70s Ann Peebles hit, I Can't Stand the Rain. That became the big hit. But she works, she produces her records along with a guy named Tim Mosley, who I think together they're going to be the production team for the next few years, that kind of style that they have, which is to kind of bury the words under lots of very thick collage kind of soundscapes. A lot of times the music is nearly abstract. A lot of times the words are almost nonsense syllables, as in the cut that I'd like to play, which is called Izzy Izzy Ah.
Girls be talking like they all rah-rah. Blizzy, blizzy, blase, blase, blase. None of y'all ain't that good to get with me. Izzy, izzy, ah, zah, zah, zah. Girls be talking like they all rah-rah. Blizzy, blizzy, blase, blase, blase. None of y'all ain't that good to get with me. M-A to the G, double O. My man Mo, smooth like Joe. Timberland, where you get that dough? I'ma get my people, people. Come and drink some more. Flow to me come so natural. I'ma take a stroll, roll this hydro. I'ma take my to pizzazz or esso.
That's Missy Elliott, and her CD is on Ken Tucker's Top 10 for 1997. Ken, who's next on your Top 10?
Corner Shop, this British West Indian band led by songwriter-singer Jinder Singh. To me, Corner Shop really occupied the place that Beck did last year on my list, in the sense of someone completely out of left field doing something that no one else is doing, this kind of cut-and-paste collage using a whole array of influences. Corner Shop's debut album was called When I Was Born for the Seventh Time. I really like the way that Jinder Singh combines this kind of singer-songwriter, confessional lyrics often, combined with this Punjabi rhythms, hip-hop rhythms. It's a real eclectic sort of record that I think really hit a lot of people very hard as a kind of influence this year. The track I'd like to play is called Sleep on the Left Side.
Catchy, and I guess one of the things that intrigues me about the record is that it has the influence of everybody's interest in world music now, but it's so translated into pop.
That's right, yeah.
Plus English lyrics.
That's right.
Which I like.
Exactly.
Well, Ken, so far on your 10 best list, we've heard from Dylan, Hanson, Sleater-Kinney, Missy Elliott, and Corner Shop. Why don't you run down the rest of the groups that made it onto your 10 best?
Yeah, there are two country albums on my list. Certainly of the major country releases by big stars this year, Shania Twain's album, which is called Come On Over, I liked a lot. I liked it in the sense of it being an album that really wants a big, large, wide audience, but yet remains true to its vision of a kind of country pop. I didn't care as much for the other big releases like Garth Brooks' Sevens and Leanne Rimes' You Light Up My Life, which I thought were kind of overblown and pretentious kind of releases. The smaller country album is by a guy named Buddy Miller, who lives in Nashville primarily as a songwriter, but he's originally from New York. He put out an album called Poison Love on a small label, High Tone, that I really liked a lot in terms of its being a very traditional, old-fashioned country music album. There are two singer-songwriter albums on my list. Ron Sexsmith, a singer-songwriter from Canada, put out an album called Other Songs that had a lot of lovely music on it. And Michael Penn, whom you interviewed here recently, his album Resigned, I thought was a really terrific example of that kind of very richly produced pop music that that I really appreciate. The final album on my list is by Yo La Tengo, the New York band, their album called I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One. Ira Kaplan and Georgia Hubley, the husband and wife team who write and perform most of their music, I thought they did a really great job 10 years on, carrying on that kind of post-punk tradition in Lower Manhattan.
Ken, what do you think were some of the defining moments of 1997 in pop?
Well, if you read the rock press and listened to the hype, this was supposed to be the year of electronica, of jungle music, of drum and bass music, which all came from England. It didn't really take off here at all. I mean, the English have much more of a taste for that kind of novelty, whereas I think this year in America it proved to be very much a middle-of-the-road pop year. Tremendous success for acts like Celine Dion, Jewel, just completely forgettable acts to my ears, like Matchbox 20, a British group called Jamiroquai that won a lot of awards. I think one of the things you saw this year was that rise of the female singer-songwriter, particularly this summer, the Lilith Fair that was organized by Sarah McLachlan, and in the success of people like Sean Colvin and Jewel. I must say, you know, I took my 15-year-old daughter to see Sarah McLachlan, and I sat there saying, this isn't even Linda Ronstadt. This is like, I don't know, Maria Muldaur or Carla Bonoff, some very minor 70s singer-songwriter kind of influence. I can understand the impulse to enjoy that music, but it seems to me to be a very generational phenomenon. There was a lot better music around that I thought was being made kind of in the margins by sort of more sort of stubborn individuals who kind of prize song form, a very conservative kind of American songcraft. I think that's what Bob Dylan was about. In a way, that's what Hanson is about. It can go from age to youth in that sense.
You've also brought with you some ideas of rock and roll moments that embodied rock and roll, even though they weren't really musical moments.
Yeah, it struck me that there are a lot of kind of non-rock figures who embodied the spirit of rock and roll, mm-hmm. as well as anything in the music. I'm thinking of things like Chris Rock, the way he hosted the MTV Video Awards and really punctured a lot of pretensions, in particular the way he sort of savaged Fiona Apple's rather adolescent rant about what's hip and what's not in rock music. There's a moment in the movie Boogie Nights when Mark Wahlberg is getting dressed and you suddenly up on the soundtrack swells Casey and the Sunshine Band's Boogie Shoes. It just gave me the shivers. It just was like a great, it was just wonderful to have that song set off that way. I thought that was a great rock and roll moment. Greil Marcus's book called Invisible Republic, which was a kind of cultural history of the making of Bob Dylan and the band's basement tapes. I thought that was a rock and roll moment through literature this year that was wonderful. Ellen DeGeneres, the way she came out on her show, to me that was the sort of TV equivalent of Sleater Kinney. You know, a real kind of aggressive, I am a lesbian, this is me, deal with me, which I found echoes in the Sleater-Kinney record. I thought that was an interesting moment. And The death of Allen Ginsberg in April really brought home to me how much Ginsberg was that kind of spirit who embodied rock and roll, too. I mean, he literally collaborated with rock acts over the years, including The Clash. And on this Corner Shop album that is on my list, Corner Shop set a poem of his to music. And he himself released a recording this year called Ballad of the Skeletons that I think would be appropriate to end with.
Well, why don't we do that? And Ken, I want to thank you for talking about 1997 in pop. Ken Tucker is Fresh Air's rock critic and also is critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. And Ken, I want to wish you a happy 1998.
Well, same to you, Terry. Thanks a lot.